And never, ever forget that all gun control laws are nothing less than overt acts of aggression against the American people and their rights.
Exercise your rights in a safe way.
Stupidity to think that someone hell-bent on violating the law against murder will magically be stopped by a gun control law.
Politicians that infringe on our God-given rights. He calls them out. He's not here to play.
You better believe we're locked and loaded on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. I am Royce, your host, still reeking of gunshot residue, toxic masculinity, and just a tantalizing whiff of the cologne of my people, Hops Number 9. Yes, bringing the truth about firearms, the Second Amendment, and all things pertaining thereto, right at you with 100% felt recoil and no suppressor, baby. Got a lot to talk about today, as always. First, let me let you know you can contact me through the social media Farcebook page. Look for the Shooting Straight Radio podcast and hit the message button there. I always respond. Not maybe as timely as I would like to, but, you know, I got to work for a living, too. I'm sorry. I just can't always jump right to it. I wish I could. I love hearing from all of you out there. Also, you can shoot me an email at royce@shootingstraightradio.com. You can also become a Patreon sponsor and sponsor the program for $5, $10 a month, whatever would is feasible for you, and I will thank you in advance for it. You'll receive content that other people just don't receive, not to mention first access to all the episodes of the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. Well, there's been a lot of bull fertilizer getting slung around about a recent settlement between the families of the Sandy Hook Massacre and Remington Outdoors Company. And I tell you what, the media loves, if it wasn't for lies and lying, they wouldn't have anything to report, it seems like. They just can't help but take a case like this, twist things around, make perceptions that are not there, make conclusions that don't exist, and create a false narrative surrounding the case. I will tell you right now, don't let the media mislead you about what has happened with this case. They have told a lot of half-truths, purposeful misdirections, and outright lies. And I'll tell you what exactly everything I think about this right after we first hear from my friends at OnlineAmmo.com.
OnlineAmmo.com. Their mission is your ammunition. Now is the time to stock up on ammunition. And if you want the best selection of hard-to-find ammo, friendly and knowledgeable customer service, quality and selection you can count on, the ammo you need delivered fast right to your door, then it's OnlineAmmo.com. They are the real deal. And my buddy Hank Hayes, the VP of OnlineAmmo.com, wants you to use the code SHIPFREENOW on all orders over $200. OnlineAmmo.com is more than just an ammo retailer. They also have optics, accessories, and firearms for sale at OnlineAmmo.com. And they're proud to be master dealers of Glock, Ruger, and Smith & Wesson. Their mission, your ammunition. OnlineAmmo.com.
Yeah, my buddy Hank Hayes, you heard him on the program on the last podcast. Great guy. And yes, check it out at OnlineAmmo.com. So back to this settlement. The Sandy Hook families allegedly agreed to a $73 million settlement with gunmaker Remington, according to USA Today. This article was authored by Christine Fernando. The headline itself is not true. It's a lie. Remington didn't agree to anything. All right. Let's go through the article, and I'm going to rip it apart as we go. says families of nine victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre agreed Tuesday to a $73 million settlement against the maker of the gun used in the deadly 2012 shooting. All right, let me throw this in here first. It is horrible what happened there at Sandy Hook. I don't think we have all the answers yet. I don't think we have the whole truth and the whole story yet, because there's a lot of really funny, shady things about that whole incident that I don't care to go into until I have absolute proof. But if I ever do, I can assure you, and you can be assured that I'll bring it out here on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. But just having had access to some of the photographs of the crime scene, there's a lot of things that simply do not add up. And I just have to leave you wondering what that is. But I do not for a second, and I am not for a second denigrating the families who lost children in this incident. No, I don't think it was a hoax. I think children actually died. I think teachers actually died. I do not for a second, and I am not for a second trying to downplay at all the horrific events of that day, or to cast any kind of a shadow on the grief of the families, okay? So keep that in mind as we go through this. Don't you think I'm just being a heartless host and that I don't care about the surviving families. That's not true. I care about the truth. I want the truth to be told, and the truth is not being told with this article from USA Today. It continues, the settlement follows several years of litigation with Remington Arms, the maker of the Bushmaster AR-15-style rifle that was used to kill 20 first graders and six teachers at the elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut. Okay, that part is not true either. This litigation was with the insurers of Remington Outdoor Company. Remington Outdoor Company does not even exist any longer. They were dissolved in 2020 via bankruptcy and had their assets auctioned off. They're not able to make this decision. Back to the article. Nicole Hockley, whose son Dylan was one of the first graders killed, called the settlement a landmark historic victory. Hockley is also the co-founder and CEO of Sandy Hook Promise Foundation, a nonprofit focused on gun violence prevention, there's a buzzword, founded by family members of Sandy Hook victims. Unfortunately, this is just another gun control political action group. She made the statement. She said, the gun industry has been shielded from being held accountable for their part in these tragedies. Today, that changes. Okay? That is a fallacious statement. I'm sorry, Mrs. Hockley, for the loss of your child. But first of all, the gun industry is not shielded when they are actually accountable. That's a fallacy. That's a falsehood. When their products, and there's any kind of liability associated with the inherent design of any of their products, they are indeed held accountable, and there is nothing shielding them from that. But no part of the gun industry, any manufacturer, including Remington Outdoor Company, had anything to do with the fateful events of the day you lost your child and others lost theirs. I'm sorry, but let's not ruin and sully the memories of the dead by heaping lies upon their graves. Gun makers they're only immune from lawsuits against them for third-party actions with their products. That's it. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, That would be like holding Ford or Chevrolet responsible for the actions of a malicious drunk driver or even a terrorist using a vehicle as a weapon and saying, well, you guys are responsible because you marketed these cars as fast and powerful and you basically appealed to the diminished mental capacity of these wackos that used them for weapons, or you appealed to drinkers and people who have alcohol problems and alcohol addictions. You appealed to them through your marketing and they decided to use your car, your make, your model, everything like that as a weapon that killed my family member. That's about as much sense as that makes, okay? So the gun industry played zero part in what happened at Sandy Hook. Keep that in mind. Back to the article. And here's the truth. Finally, I mean, little Miss, what's her name? I've already forgot her name. I went by it too quickly. Miss Christine Fernando actually accidentally swerves into the truth here for just a second. She said four insurers for Remington, which has filed for bankruptcy twice in 2 years, have agreed to pay the $73 million. That's right. They did. The insurers did, not Remington. And by the way, the attorneys for Remington, the attorneys for the estate of Remington, were very confident that if the case had actually gone to trial, they'd have mopped the floor with the plaintiff's attorneys. Because one judge actually said that it would be a Herculean task to actually make the connection between Remington's advertising and the actions of the shooter there at Sandy Hook. Now, I usually have a policy on this program of not using the names of mass murderers. I may have to refer to this shooter's name a couple of times just to make the point. So I will briefly violate my policy today. Don't hold it against me. It said, as part of the settlement, Remington also agreed to allow the families to release documents they obtained during the lawsuit, including ones that show how the gunmaker marketed the weapon, said Joshua Koskoff, the lead attorney representing the families. Okay, that's not true either. Remington did not agree to that because, number one, Remington does not even actually exist and therefore had no standing in the decision-making process. The attorneys for the insurance companies are the ones who agreed to this. Get the facts straight right now. The insurers who settled this case are not part of the gun industry, so no firearms company had any part in this settlement, including the now defunct Remington Outdoors. Got it? Mr. Koskoff said from the beginning, it was not about the money. Oh, please, you're an attorney. You actually want us to believe that? It was about getting answers and learning about these decisions. In other words, the decisions involving marketing. He added, the linchpin of this settlement is that it allows these families the right to share the information as to what they learned. Please do. I'd love to see the documents, and I'd love to know how any of it can even be remotely construed or connected to the influence it had on, or it allegedly had on, the shooter. I want to know how in the world any of the advertising that was presented by Remington Arms, while they were still a company, could be possibly proven to have been the influential linchpin that made the shooter do what he did that day. Okay? The article continues, Remington previously offered the victims' families $33 million in a possible settlement last year. Wrong again. The insurance companies offered the $33 million, okay? Remington, like I said, doesn't even exist anymore. I want you to understand what's being done here. This is intentionally being painted as though Remington saw the error of its ways. They saw the damage it had done with its advertising. They were feeling remorseful and decided to assuage the grief of the families by offering them first $33 million and then agreeing to $73 million to settle the whole thing. And that is a false narrative, people. That's a false narrative. So originally, the insurers offered $33 million to the families. And Mr. Koskoff told USA Today in August that the offer was, quote, grossly inadequate. Well, wait a minute, Mr. Koskoff. I thought you said it wasn't about the money. Oops. You said it was never about the money. It was about getting answers. You lying sack of crap. It's about the money for you, sir. Yeah, I can't help but wonder how much of that money you're getting, Mr. Koskoff. Hmm? Oh, because if this was done on a contingency basis, like I believe it was, though I can't prove it yet, I'm willing to bet this is what comes out, that you're going to get 30 to 40% right off the top. plus all expenses. I'll be very surprised if the families manage to net, say, $30 million total after you skim off your part, Mr. Koskoff. Not about the money, huh? The article continues, the civil court case in Connecticut hinged on how Remington marketed the rifle, accusing the gunmaker of targeting young, at-risk men through product placement in violent video games and ads, including one that used the phrase, "Consider your man card reissued." Well, I actually saw that article in an Outdoors magazine, and I don't see how it could be construed or even thought to influence anybody to do what that shooter did that day. Are you telling me that the shooter did what he allegedly did because that statement made him think that killing a bunch of elementary school kids with an AR-15 made him a man? Is that what you expect us to believe? And you're actually alleging that Remington targeted emotionally disturbed young men in particular? You really want us to believe that? Who, in their right stinking mind, as a company that's marketing its products, actually aims them at mentally disturbed people, huh? This whole thing is so utterly ridiculous. I don't know whether to scream, yell. I'm going to watch my tongue here. I'm about to say something I probably shouldn't say. The victims' families, the article continues, argued that Remington violated Connecticut's unfair trade practices law when it knowingly marketed and promoted the Bushmaster XM15-E2S rifle for use in assaults against human beings. Prove it, please. The marketing essentially glorifies violence and the military use of a weapon to young men, Mr. Koskoff said previously to USA Today. But feel free to explain how, Mr. Koskoff. Remington's lawyers denied the allegations in court and argued there was no evidence to show Remington's marketing had anything to do with the shooting. Matter of fact, the Remington attorneys, or the attorneys for Remington's estate, they were wanting this to go to trial. They were fully prepared for this to go to trial, and for some strange reason, the insurers, the ones that were insuring Remington at the time that they were alive, which means, I don't know if you realize this, but you can go after someone's insurance company even if that insurer does not still insure the person you're trying to sue. Because if they insured them at that time, then there can be some liability assigned if there is actually something provable, which in this case there is not. Mr. Koskoff said federal law gave the gun industry the perception that nothing they did could ever be subject to scrutiny. Nothing they did could ever lead to liability. That's not true, Mr. Koskoff, and that is a fallacy that people like you and others have created. Manufacturers can indeed be held liable for product defects, sir, and for other issues that may result in harm if the designs of their guns cause harm. Matter of fact, Sig Sauer recently had multiple lawsuits brought against them for issues with their P320. So don't sit there and act like they had total blanket protection and lack of liability and that they were totally never held accountable. That's simply not true. That's a lie. He said the lawsuit's outcome, quote, shattered that perception. The only thing it shattered, sir, was common sense. He said the immunity protecting the gun industry is not bulletproof. What he means is lawyer proof, of course. Now, I'm about to throw one tiny little fact into this mix about this whole case, and it's going to totally blow this settlement and the basis of it and all of the ridiculous assertions by Koskoff and the plaintiffs right out of the water. First, I want to tell you about my friends out at WJS Guns in Merritt Island. My buddies out at WJS Guns in Merritt Island, Bill Stasak and Dalton and Troy and the gang out there do a fine job taking care of all their customers, including law enforcement officers who want to buy Blue Label firearms. He's a Blue Label dealer for multiple manufacturers. Also, very female friendly. They do a great job serving all of their customers. They will get you squared away and well regulated in your Second Amendment rights. He offers handguns, long guns, a great selection of 1791 gun leather brand holsters. Also, body armor, ammunition, magazines. What are you looking for? Bill's got you covered out there at WJS Guns. Check him out at WJSGuns.com. If you want to do some fishing, he's got you covered with fishing tackle. Bill is a total outdoor store. WJSGuns.com. Check him out there. Do make sure you tell him you heard about him on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast.
Yes, great people out there. Make sure you tell Bill, Troy, Dalton, and the gang out there, Royce Bartlett sent you. So there is this one little fact. It's actually a well-known fact, but for some reason it's being skimmed over in this brouhaha about this settlement. Again, I want to remind you, this settlement is, or actually not the settlement, but the media is taking this settlement, which was engineered by the insurers of Remington, the ones who insured Remington at the time. And they're taking this thing and spinning the narrative on it as if Remington has admitted to some sort of wrongdoing. That is exactly how they're trying to paint this whole thing. But here's this one little pesky fact that you need to remember. Because remember, this whole thing was centered on the advertising by Remington and how that advertising for the firearm that was allegedly used at Sandy Hook is what inspired the shooter, I'm trying to keep from saying his name, to purchase that gun and go do what he did. Listen to me. Because I wonder why the judge even allowed this case to be heard in light of this one little fact. The whole time, the plaintiff's attorney has been crowing about how Remington's advertising was the evil influence that inspired the shooter to buy this Bushmaster AR and commit his deeds. How could that possibly be when the shooter wasn't even the one who purchased the gun? Oops. That's right. The alleged shooter, the one who allegedly did everything, all that damage, and then killed himself with a handgun, he isn't the one who purchased that rifle. His mama was. And he allegedly killed her with it before he went on his spree. She was his first victim. So tell me about how that advertising is what inspired the shooter to do what he did. You know, in spite of the insurance companies being the ones to settle this on their own volition, you can expect premiums to rise for all gun manufacturers now, and possibly retailers too, and distributors, as if it was their fault. And they're going to point to this, this settlement and say, oh, well, this is the reasoning behind it. You know, the media maggots have already spun this into a great victory against the gun industry, and they've touted this imagined success as the beginning of the end for gun manufacturers. Remember, I told you before many times here, the Democrat Communist Party wants to cut off the supply chain of firearms and ammo to the people, which is quite literally, as I've said before, nothing but an act of war against the American people. It's a treasonous act of war to attempt to disarm the people, but yet they are doing it. And I believe with all my heart that these insurance companies have been weaponized against the right to keep and bear arms now. You know, first they tried to weaponize financial institutions, and a lot of financial institutions will not, they will not provide, payment services for gun retailers or gun manufacturers for that matter. So I believe this settlement exemplifies that insurance companies have now been weaponized against our freedoms. Insurance companies have a lot of power, people. They got enormous power. Matter of fact, I remember when I was a general contractor and one of my regular customers called me. He says, can you come do an inspection on my roof? My insurance company says, I need to replace my roof, but it looks practically brand new. And I came out there and I said, well, how old is the roof? He said, I put it on like 7 or 8 years ago. And I said, but that's a 30, those are 30 year shingles. And the roof's only 8 years old. He said, yeah, but they're trying to tell me if I don't replace my roof that they are not going to insure me. And he had to spend $12,000 having his roof replaced. When the roofers came out there, they said, what we're tearing off of here is fine. We're tearing off perfectly good roofing material. There's nothing wrong with it. It's got a lot of life left. The insurance company basically told him, we don't care. You want insurance? Replace your roof. This all happened, of course, after the 2004 string of hurricanes beat the living dickens out of Florida. And somehow that was the people's fault. And now we have to pay for that. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of power. And this is a lot of power that can be harnessed by our enemies, people that despise our right to keep and bear arms and other rights. And this power can be leveraged against us. So what happens when firearms manufacturers, distributors, and retailers can no longer purchase liability insurance, huh? Yeah, because that's what they're trying to do. And you know good and well that when insurance companies refuse to insure any part of the gun industry, it's going to be based on the erroneous, fallacious conclusions engendered by this very case. And even if they do acquiesce to insuring people in the gun industry, they're going to make sure the premiums are going to be so exorbitant that it's going to drive firearms prices out of the reach of the average citizen. Either way, you think about this, the leftists in this country can bypass the legislative process and they can literally use insurance companies to enact de facto gun control. Because if you make an industry or a product appear to be too risky to insure, there's no need to take the legislative route. You can simply circumvent it and effectively and negatively impact the right to keep and bear arms without passing any more gun control laws. This is very insidious, people, and it's nothing less than financial fascism. But mark my words, they're doing it because, again, I say, Remington had no say in this decision. The insurance companies got together, four of them, and decided we'll all chip in this much, and we'll go ahead and just give you the money for it without any evidence that proved that the advertising by Remington actually, engendered this crime. Do you understand what they've done in this, right? I've got the feeling more evidence about this decision is going to come out in the near future, or maybe even a little bit later than that. I think there's some money that was offered to these insurance companies or something along those nefarious lines. But I do believe we haven't heard the end of this, and I do believe we're going to find out more about it, and you're going to go, oh, yes, now it makes sense. Think about this, people. They want us disarmed. They will do whatever it takes. They will take whatever route they think they need to take. But their end goal and their end game has nothing to do with public safety, has everything to do with taking our guns from our hands so that we are defenseless. Much like the truckers up there in Canada who have been disarmed, and now they're at the mercy of those police officers up there who have apparently forgotten all about who they really should be serving, who are up there assaulting, battering, and even killing a couple of those demonstrators thus far, and they've got no way to fight back. I tell you what, I don't think there's a single police department in America that would even think about doing something like that unless they're in one of the communist-occupied territories. You wouldn't do that down here in Florida, I guarantee you that. No, sir. As much as I love and support the law enforcement profession, I tell you what, I will love and support them as long as they don't cross constitutional boundaries and begin to act as thugs for those in power. Once they start doing that, as far as I'm concerned, they have abandoned and forsaken the oath they took to uphold and defend the Constitution. And once they have lent their power to unscrupulous totalitarians, well, That's about the time they've declared themselves to be enemies of the people. And the people going to have something to say about that. Being an armed populace makes all the difference in the world. And if you don't believe me, I challenge you to ask one of those truckers right now if they'd like to be armed in the face of this flagrant thuggery by those Canadian cops. We're going to take a blood pressure break just for my sake more than anything. And I'm going to tell you about my friends out at shootingclasses.com.
Shootingclasses.com. If you are a firearms instructor, that's the only logical place to run your firearms business from. Shootingclasses.com. You can set up your page there, set up your profile, set up your classes, take payments there. Your certificates are auto-generated. Rosters are auto-generated. And also sends emails out to your students before the class, reminding them at least a week or two out they have a class coming up. And I can't find any other platform out there where it makes sense to run your business from if you're a firearms instructor. Everything's right there. Even if you want to print your financial reports come tax time, it's all right there at shootingclasses.com. If you're a student, set up an account out there and you get matched up with some serious, serious firearms instructors. Men like David Boone Benton, Israel Matos, Chris Tonto Ferranto, and guys like that, Bill Orndorff, Bruce Corey. Those are the guys that actually founded shootingclasses.com. It's genius, and it simply doesn't make sense to try to run your business from any other platform, shootingclasses.com.
So there's all kinds of lawsuits in the news. Yes, matter of fact, there's a federal lawsuit. They're suing one of the states. And by the way, that's the title of the podcast is Lawsuits and Lies, because there's a whole lot of that going on. And this lawsuit by the Department of Justice, in which they're suing Missouri over Missouri's law that declares several federal firearms laws totally invalid, which is the right thing to do. Go Missouri. They are. The allegations they're making are laughable, mainly because they are so dad-blamed ironic. And here's the article by Sophie Reardon. The U.S. Justice Department sued Missouri on Wednesday, seeking to stop the state from enforcing a bill it passed last year that declared several federal firearms laws invalid. The complaint alleges that the bill, known as the Second Amendment Preservation Act, is unconstitutional and is hindering law enforcement efforts. Now, just think about this. This is a law or a bill known as Second Amendment Preservation Act. Okay? In other words, the preservation of a particular portion of the supreme law of the land, and the DOJ is saying it's unconstitutional. Just let the irony sink in there for just a second, okay? And by the way, it's not hindering law enforcement efforts. What it does is hinder federal thugs from enforcing unconstitutional, in other words, illegal, laws within the state of Missouri. Says the bill, which was signed into law June 2021, allows for federal, state, and local law enforcement officers to be penalized for enforcing the federal laws. According to a report done by CBS News 60 Minutes, officers who try to enforce certain federal gun laws could face a penalty of up to $50,000. Good. This is how you hold public servants accountable for crimes against the supreme law of the land. You put teeth in it and you make it hurt. In its complaint, the Justice Department argues that it's unconstitutional for a state to declare a federal law invalid. Really? Feel free to cite clause and section there, Merrick Garland. Feel free to cite the portion of the Constitution it violates. And for a big, really tall glass of chilled irony, sir, what about when the federal government declares the Bill of Rights within our supreme law to be invalid by enacting and enforcing unconstitutional laws in direct violation of the Second Amendment? Huh? And what about when you guys declare yourselves, under force of arms, of course, that you can violate our supreme law whenever you want, and you can pass illegal laws, and you can enforce them with deadly force if necessary. And you want to complain that a state has nullified illegal laws? Oh, and you don't like the enforcement part? You don't like laws being enforced against you? Well, we the people don't like illegal laws being enforced against us either, but you have no problem with that part. The article continues. The department also says the bill has caused, quote, rampant confusion and has made officials in Missouri withdraw support for federal law enforcement efforts, including by not sharing critical data used to solve violent crimes and withdrawing from joint federal task forces. Critical information that state and local officials, offices, previously shared with federal law enforcement officers to facilitate public safety. I'm hating that term. And law enforcement is now frequently unavailable to federal law enforcement agencies. Well, here's a couple of things for you to think about. First of all, state law enforcement officers are not required to be at the beck and call of federal agents, nor are they required at all to allow themselves to be subjugated to the whimsical enforcement of illegal laws passed by the federal government. This isn't about public safety. It's about stretching the tentacles of federal power into the states by intertwining themselves inextricably into every law enforcement agency throughout America, and that's exactly what's going on. Mr. Merrick B. Garland, Mr. Attorney General, he said, this act impedes criminal law enforcement operations in Missouri. No, it doesn't. The law enforcement officials in Missouri can handle it all just fine without your help. And by the way, the NFA and the Gun Control Act, well, they impede our free exercise of our rights. So you're whining about this act impeding your enforcement of illegal laws? Yeah, that's right. The National Firearms Act and the Gun Control Act basically impedes and infringes the right of the people who keep and bear arms, which in turn diminishes the security of our free state, which means enforcement of these laws is nothing short of treason. They said the United States will work to ensure that our state and local law enforcement partners are not penalized for doing their jobs to keep our community safe. Whoa, Nelly. If part of doing your job crosses constitutional boundaries, you have every right to be prosecuted for it. And we have every right to prosecute you. I'm so sick of hearing this. We're just doing our job. That didn't work at Nuremberg, baby, and it ain't going to fly here, especially when your job, especially if you work for the ATF, your job description is essentially the infringement of the rights of the people. In other words, you're an illegal agency, and you can't keep our communities safe. The United States will work to ensure that our state and local law enforcement partners are not penalized for doing their job to keep our communities safe. You mean like you've ensured that the people are penalized for simply exercising rights they were born with, and you did that through enforcing illegal federal laws? If you were actually able to keep communities safe, then how come there are so many unsafe communities across this land? And why are they all in communist-occupied territories? The article continues. It adds that the bill has resulted in dozens of officers resigning from federal joint task forces in the state. Stand by. They make it sound like officers are resigning from law enforcement. No, they're quitting the joint task force teams. You see how they're twisting the wording here to make it sound like we're costing jobs in Missouri by enforcing these laws, In the 60 Minutes report, O'Donnell found that several local officials, including those who support Second Amendment rights, thought the law was unconstitutional. Okay, y'all keep saying this, that it's unconstitutional, but yet you refuse to cite any references thereto. And why might that be? Because whenever I call something illegal, constitutionally illegal, I back it up with actual constitutional references. How come you guys ain't doing that here? You think if you just throw the word unconstitutional out there that it's going to stick? Yeah, we're smarter than that. Casey Proctor, who serves as the prosecutor for rural Butler County, told O'Donnell that she and her children are gun owners. And although she is in favor of expanding Second Amendment rights, she does not support the bill. Hold your horses right there. What is this expanding Second Amendment rights crap? Huh? You know, you understand that implies that the government is the dispenser of our rights? What do you mean? You don't have any power to expand anything. And this isn't an expansion, nor is it even a reinstatement, because you constitutionally dyslexic jackasses have no rightful power over the free exercise of our rights in any way, shape, or form. You have no lawful, no rightful authority over our rights. The only reason we haven't risen up and thrashed you all back into constitutional submission yet is because we are far more peaceful than our own government. I'm so tired of hearing that term, the expansion of constitutional right. You don't have any power to expand our rights. You don't even have any power to diminish our rights if we decide we don't want them diminished. She said, what I oppose about it and what I would ask for to be looked at and possibly fixed is the ability for law enforcement officers to interact with their federal partners. We don't have federal partners on the state level. Anyway, to go after people who are violent in nature and are committing crimes in our community. Okay, since when do states have to have federal cooperation or cooperate with federal forces in order to arrest bad people within their state? Are you saying that our respective agencies are impotent without the federal input? And why is nobody pointing out that the reason that Missouri is doing this is because they're actually defending the supreme law of the land against federal officers whose job description includes the willful infringement thereof? Why is nobody pointing that out? You're slanting this to make it out that Missouri is standing in the way of common sense law enforcement. That's not the case. What they are doing is upholding their duty to uphold and defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and that's what they're doing. To sit there and call a Second Amendment Preservation Act unconstitutional is absolutely ludicrous and laughable, and it is a lie. It's simply not true. I want you to hear from my good buddy Anthony out there at Counter-Strike Tactical before we go much further.
Counter-Strike Tactical is the best little gun store in Melbourne and proud sponsors of the Shooting Straight Radio Podcast. Visit us at 1008 Strawbridge Avenue and see the custom AR builds by Anthony Vallejo, owner and combat veteran. Plus, go-to weapons brand rifles, AR-15s, AK-47s, handguns, ammo, tactical rifle accessories, and more. Anthony also offers laser engraving and Cerakote. So stop in at 1008 Strawbridge Avenue and visit the best little gun store in Melbourne. Or call 321-499-4949. And tell Anthony that Roy sent you.
Yes, great guy right there, Mr. Anthony Vallejo. Proud to say I've known him for almost 3 decades, and he is a man of honor. He served our country with distinction and honor. Make sure you tell him thank you for that when you visit him out there at the best little gun store in Melbourne. All right, it seems to be all about the lawsuits today. First, the settlement between the insurers and the families from Sandy Hook, and now the federal government suing the state of Missouri for blocking their enforcement of constitutionally illegal laws. And now there were some police officers who were shot in Manchester. Was it Manchester, Tennessee? It just says Manchester. Not sure if this is... Wow, they don't even give the state here. It just says Manchester. I have no idea why. Well, wherever this Manchester happens to be, there's a judge who ruled in favor of a gun dealer who was sued by two Manchester police officers who were shot by someone who bought a gun from them. And I want you to see that this judge ruled correctly. No, I'm not happy that cops were shot. Don't read into it and don't make fallacious conclusions about me and my thought processes. So what he did was rule in favor of common sense and truth. And here's the article. It says officers Matthew O'Connor on crutches and Ryan Hardy left the courthouse May 16th in Manchester after the hearing. A court hearing for Ian McPherson, who was charged with shooting them. A judge found in favor of Chester Arms and Derry and the State Department of Safety in the lawsuit filed against them by two Manchester police officers who were shot and wounded in May of 2016. Manchester police officers Ryan Hardy and Matthew O'Connor both recovered and returned to work. They argued negligence and said their assailant should never have been able to buy a gun. The shooter, Ian McPherson, pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity and was sentenced to 5 years in the secure psychiatric unit. Hardy and O'Connor argued in Rockingham County Superior Court that McPherson should not have been able to purchase the gun from Chester Arms because of his history of mental illness. In his order dated February 11th, Judge David Ruoff granted Chester Arms and the Department of Safety's motion for summary judgment, which means the judge entered the judgment in favor of Chester Arms and the Department of Safety and against Hardy and O'Connor without a full trial. The lawyer representing Chester Arms, Sean R. List, said the court's order upholds the right of law-abiding firearms dealers to legally sell firearms without fear of liability for criminal actions of third parties. This, folks, is the essence of the Remington issue with Sandy Hook. They're acting like this is a victory over the Sandy Hook settlement. They're acting like that's a victory against the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. By the way, the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act is still in force. It is still intact. And you can't just frivolously sue a gun manufacturer because a bad person did something bad to you with a gun made by that particular gun manufacturer. Nor can you sue a gun retailer if he followed every step of the law and somehow someone got past the scrutiny and still purchased a gun who shouldn't have had a gun and they do something bad with it. And that's what happened here. So, it says Mr. List, the attorney for the gun retailer, says the lawsuit stemmed from the legal sale of a firearm to an individual who several weeks later made the personal choice to carry out a criminal act. The criminal actor is responsible for his or her own actions. Amen. A Manchester police spokesman referred calls to Hardy's and O'Connor's lawyer, Manchester attorney Mark Morissette, who did not immediately return a call Monday night. Ruoff said the Department of Safety's gun line investigated McPherson's application to purchase the pistol with due care, and the Department of Safety was entitled to sovereign immunity. To the extent that Hardy and O'Connor contend that the gun line, and this is a statement by Ruoff, that the gun line should have greater access to resources to investigate an applicant's fitness to his own firearms, or fitness to own firearms, I misread that, the court finds such an inquiry to be a legislative and not a judicial question. Chester Arms argued it was immune from civil lawsuits so long as it had not been convicted of a felony in relation to the firearms transfer at issue and the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which, by the way, also covers retailers, also prohibits such lawsuits. The Department of Safety's gun line listed McPherson's application as delayed until the day he was indicted in connection with the shooting, when it was changed to denied, according to Ruoff's order. Which, by the way, if there is no plausible, no firm reason to deny someone the right to purchase a firearm, then I'm sorry, but you have no cause to do so. It says, once the sale is put on a delay status, a federal firearms licensee is required to wait until after 3 business days before it may proceed with the sale, according to the order. And that's what happened. While the delay was still in place, but after the 3 required business days on April 1st, 2016, McPherson returned to Chester Arms and purchased the firearm. And on May 13th, 2016, he used that weapon to shoot Manchester police officers, Ruoff wrote. Once again, though, listen to me. The gun retailer did everything right and within the confines of the law. The background check system there, the gun line, they did everything in accordance with the law. Sometimes bad people slip under the radar. Sometimes they're able to squeak through. And that's why the entirety of the population, as many as are able to do so, should be keeping and bearing arms and be trained in the judicious use thereof. We people are the first and front line of in defense against crime, not the police department. The victims are, the potential victims are, we are. We are our own first responders. We are already on the scene. Ruoff wrote, he said, the reports showed that none of McPherson's NICS hits disqualified him from taking possession of the firearm because they did not meet a victim relationship requirement prescribed by federal law. Ruoff also addressed comments made by Merrimack Police Detective Scott Park, who sent the gun line a fax stating, Merrimack Police have had dealings with Mr. McPherson including having been made aware through family members that he had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Mr. McPherson has displayed on many occasions delusional behavior, which should serve as a significant concern should he obtain a firearm. Well, but if the man is not acting schizophrenic while he's in the purchase of the firearm, the gun retailers are not required to be licensed mental therapists, okay, or psychologists. Ruoff wrote, further, to the extent plaintiffs contend that Mr. McPherson should have been denied access to a firearm based on mere allegations of his mental illness, the court finds that such an action would have been inconsistent with federal regulation. And that's very true, okay? Because the law requires an adjudication of mentally defective. You have to be adjudicated by a court as mentally defective. It has to be paperwork showing that you've been committed to a mental institution, or there has to have been a very firm diagnosis that you are a prohibited person, period. So keep that in mind. It's not always as clear cut as it seems, especially when the media start taking facts and twisting them. The media has already taken this story that I just read you and making it sound like that, well, gun manufacturers and gun retailers and everybody else in the gun industry are simply immune from any prosecution and any liability whatsoever, and it simply is not true. Again, I tell you, the title of this podcast, of this particular episode, is Lawsuits and Lies, because it seems that the media just can't help themselves and can't stop lying about all the circumstances surrounding these particular lawsuits. We're going to take a quick break and hear about my buddy Rockin' Rod Rao. We'll be right back on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast.
Hey everybody, Rockin' Rod from Sigerman here. Let's talk about money. You have it and so do I. If you give me money, I can get you guns. If you have guns to get rid of, I can get you money. Got a lot of stuff in stock. Best way to reach me is through the text, which I will give you that number a little bit later on. Got a bunch of inventory, AR, shotguns, tons of handguns, etc. And if you do, like I said, if you got stuff you need to sell, hit me up. We're always looking to acquire nice used guns. We'll even take some ugly ones once in a while. This is Rockin' Rod from Sigerman, and you can reach me at 561 541-445-0429. 561-445-0429. Either by voicemail or by text. Take care, everybody.
Sigerman, godfather of the dirty hippie mafia.
Great guy right there. Honored to call Rockin' Rod Rao, a good friend of mine. He is a fine man indeed. Give him a call, 561-445-0429 for whatever you're looking for. In particular, if you have guns for sale, you heard the man. Give him a call. All right. Now, in closing, I just want to make, I want to give you some things to think about, because everything I do on here is pretty much designed to counter lies told by the media and the Democrat Communist Party and everything else about the Second Amendment in particular. Remember and never forget that they want us disarmed. Don't fall for their lies. Don't let them tell you, we just want public safety. And by the way, we are never going to convince them that what they believe is not true. Number one, a lot of them know it isn't true. But a lot of them who have been, you know, so gullibly led away and actually believe the crap that they're spouting, you're never going to convince them. There's never going to come a point where they go, oh, okay, well, now I see it. You're right. All right. And then back, okay, we don't want gun control no more. It's not going to happen. It simply is not going to happen. Don't think that it will. I want you to think about something in regards to people owning weapons of war, because that's what they call our AR-15s and our Mini-14s and our AK-47s and weapons like that. I don't play the semantics game, number one. I don't call it a modern sporting rifle, just to keep it, just to make sure it falls within the sporting purposes definition of the illegal 1968 Gun Control Act, okay? By the way, the 1968 Gun Control Act is predicated upon the 1938 Nazi weapons law of Nazi Germany. Yep. There's a book out there that perfectly correlates the two. So, don't give me this crap about it doesn't have a sporting purpose. You show me sporting purposes in the Second Amendment. Our founders weren't about us being armed for the sake of sporting. Yeah, they weren't just coming back from a big deer hunt when they penned the Second Amendment. They penned the Second Amendment for the people to have the means and the power to defend themselves against their own government if at all necessary at any time in our existence as a nation. So you say, well, what kind of weapon should somebody own? Well, okay, let's think about something here. When people arm themselves to counter predatory threats, they choose firearms that are most appropriate for counting whatever particular threat they think they're going to need it for, right? Okay, let's say for predatory animals. If you are going to be in bear country, and I've had this discussion with friends of mine often, I tell them flat out, I'd want a 10 millimeter or at least a 40 caliber. If I'm going to be possibly going up against bears, I want a lot of ammo at my disposal. I want more than 6 shots that a revolver holds. I'm going to use probably a 10 millimeter. At a minimum, a 40, and I'm not going to use hollow points because I want max penetration. And I want enough ammo I can dump into them and reload quickly. So a semi-automatic platform is what I would probably want if I knew I was going to be in bear country. All right. Or a semi-automatic 12 gauge shotgun or 12 gauge pump, whatever. Something I could put a lot of power and terminal force on a very angry, large animal that outweighs me by about 600 or 700 pounds and can rip my head off with a single swipe. I want to be armed and able to counter that threat, so I want lots of power. Hey, a 458 SOCOM on an AR platform works just fine for me. Or the 50 Beowulf. Hey, whatever it takes, I want to be able to dump terminal force on that target as quickly as possible for predatory animals. Okay? So you choose the appropriate weapon with the appropriate caliber to counter the known threat. Okay, when it comes to predatory people in low places, the average street criminal. All right, a concealed handgun outside the home, 9mm, 380, 40, 45, 10mm, whatever the case may be. Something that is able to stop that particular predator. two-legged people. We are very familiar with the dynamics of how they work. Most of us are. And we are also very familiar with where shot placement on them is going to have the most effect. I mean, most of us simply don't study on where to shoot animals that might be charging us. And you should, though. But as far as the criminals in low places, a concealed handgun outside the home, inside the home, 12 gauge, AR-15, something that puts maximum force upon the intended target to shut it down as quickly as possible. So whether you're looking at predatory animals or predatory people, you always choose a firearm based on the if it's appropriate for countering that particular threat. So what do you do and what do you arm yourself with when it comes to predatory governments? There you go. Now you've got your answer. What does the government bring to you? What kind of force do they bring? Well, then that's the force we need to have. And that's why the founders, when they wrote right to keep and bear arms in the Second Amendment, that word arms literally encompassed all arms necessary to effect a robust defense against our own government, whatever arms those may happen to be. Thanks for hanging with me on this episode of the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. Remember, you can become a Patreon sponsor and get first access to the podcast. Also get media content nobody else gets. And hit me up at Royce@ShootingStraightRadio.com or catch me on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast Facebook page. And if you need to message me there, I will always respond. All right. Keep your situational awareness honed. Keep your head on a swivel. Keep your guns loaded at home. And when you walk outside the doors of your home, keep one on your person. Get as much training as you can possibly afford. And make sure that gun's always loaded, all right? Okay, and never forget, of course, incoming rounds always have the right of way. I'll catch you on the next episode.